Okay, let's answer this question. The first question is, so Buddhism does not believe there is a God. Can we follow Buddhism, Buddha's teaching, being and a Christian at the same time? So in other words, can I follow the Buddhist teaching and also be a Christian at the same time? Why not? If you're in trouble, it's better to ask two people than one. If one does not listen, the other will. But really, I from the bottom of my heart, if you believe in Jesus and at the same time you believe in Buddha, there's no harm. I don't see. People would tell you, no, you got to choose. You're at a crossroad. Either Buddha or Jesus. I love Jesus. What's wrong? But I know that everybody's teaching is a little different. You can believe in both, better than not believing in both. And if you pick one, it's better than not picking anyone. So why would I object to it? If I say, no, either Buddha or the Jesus, no, I won't say that. So that answers the question. That's the first question I haven't answered. So Buddhism does not believe there is a God. No, that's not right. Buddhism still believes that there are gods, in plural number, gods. So many gods. There's the god of the tree, god of the landscape, god of the river. There's so many gods. They are just a different kind of existence. Other than humans, there are other existences too. But god are still subject to causality. They were born, and then they go through all the living, and then they die. And they could be in a different lifespan. They could live for 500 years, 600 years. And people have been talking about ghosts. It's the same thing. We cannot prove the existence of God scientifically. But scientists cannot prove the inexistence or the existence of God too. They cannot prove that God does not exist. We cannot prove that God exists, but they cannot say, it's just like ghosts. They cannot say, we can prove that ghost does not exist. They cannot prove it otherwise. So Buddhism does not believe that there is a God. Buddhism believes that there are gods in another kind of existence. There's six paths of reincarnations. When a sentient being passes away, there are six probabilities, six options. He cannot choose one. He goes into the option based on his own karmic force. He's being pulled to it. One of these six alternatives, let us classify it this way. The three vicious rams and the three non-vicious rams. Altogether six. What are the three vicious rams? In hell, victims of hell, go down to victims of hell. Animals, ram. Ghosts, ram. So those are the three vicious rams. Why would they go down, reincarnate into three vicious rams? Are they being punished by God? Punished by Buddha? No. If you think that God would punish people, how can you call him a God? God will not punish. So they're not punished by God. They're not punished by Buddha. They go in there because of their own track of cause and effect, own track of karmic force. I always compare causality and karma and reincarnation like this. The law of cause and effect is the railroad track. It goes on the rail. The train is on the track. The train is your karmic force, your karma. It glides. It goes along the track. They all link. It's not they're not independent. They all link together. So these are the three vicious realms. How about the three non-vicious realms? Being human again, or demigod, heavenly gods, or asuras. Asuras is the lower level gods. So they are also gods, there's billions of gods. But they still have to subject themselves to reincarnation after they enjoy whatever they have. Human level, the enjoyment of human level is here. All this God's enjoyment level is very high. They could live up to thousands of years. They enjoy a lot of things. And they're not the same as humans. For people, when they were inhuman, they strictly observed the 10 precepts. They reincarnate into gods. What are these 10 precepts? Abstaining from killing, abstaining from stealing, abstaining from sexual misconduct, abstaining from lying, and abstaining from intoxicants. And also five others, virtuous deeds. When they perform all these virtuous deeds, because they have meritorious, virtuous karma, the karmic force pull them to heavens to enjoy whatever is in heavens. They are gods. They're called gods. And some people call them guardian angels, the angels. But Buddhism does not believe in the world created by God. And we can, that takes a lot of time if we go into the creator concept. But let's, if we have time, I'll answer a little bit more for you. Let's go to the next question. Why at the start of meditation class must the monk use the wooden stick to hit the ground near the entrance? First of all, the person who hit the ground near the entrance is not a monk. He's Lee. He just have a bow hat, I guess, right now. Because he shaved it so nicely and polishedly. So, it's the hitting, right? And the hitting, that means hurry up. Because in any kind of practice, you need discipline. If there's no discipline, you tend to slack off. So they say, okay, we break for a recess, then you circumambulate, or you can go to the washroom. But some people can linger in the washroom for half an hour. Or they take a nap. Or they eat a sandwich. So if they're not disciplined, they do what they want. So this is tak, 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 tak. That means you got to hurry back. Because if you don't hurry back, the door will be closed onto you. You can't get in. They close the door. But right now, in North America, we don't really observe that principle. Even if you are late, we open the door for you. So Bunny will always look out and see if there's any person come late. Actually, you're not allowed to be late. So this is back. It's coming. Hurry back. That means don't forget that we have a session of meditation in there. And now, why do we hit the floor? One fish, toop, and then hit the floor. Why is that? Because that wooden stick, what did he use that wooden incense stick for? It's the security guard guiding you. For example, if you're not running fast enough, they say faster, they hit on your back. Or if you do a drowsy, sleeping, and they would straighten your back using that stick. And they hit you so that you realize there's a little bit of pain in hitting, but if there's no feeling, it's not called a hitting. So it hits you, that means you got to behave. So that's a stick to guide behavior. So that becomes like a baton. Is it a baton? You call it a baton? Like a baton of a policeman. And in China, in a meditation hall, there are at least 12 to 20 monks carrying a baton. And there are other monks, about 200-300 monks meditating, you need 20 to 30 monks carrying a baton, a stick. So once you hit the wooden fish, and then all these other monks bang on the floor, it produced a cracking, vigilant sound. That means you don't sleep. This guy's going to hit you. It's just like a thundering sound. Imagine if 20 people hitting the floor with that stick and producing that kind of sound, you wake up. You won't go to sleep. Well, make sure that the hitter of the snake, don't be gentle. No, you do a little bit of hitting. You have to hit it really cracking sound. That means I'm not going to be too gentlemanly on you if you don't do it the right way. So cracking sound. That produces the effect of you are under attention. You are under surveillance. We are all being vigilant on what you're doing. Don't slack off. That's very important. The teacher, spare the rod, spoil the child. I learned that from a disciple of mine. In Hong Kong, once that new Buddha Hall was open, I tend to be quite gentle and relaxed with some rules. And then this lady came up to me about 50 or 56. She said, Reverend, the strict teacher would produce good students. Oh, yeah. Only the strict teachers. Teachers who are stern, who really want the students to learn, then they will produce good students. Teachers who are relaxing and don't really care, and you can do what you want. Say, for example, in some high school, students can put their legs on the tables, and they can smoke, they can chew their gum. So when they're listening to the teacher, they chew gum, they smoke, and they do what they want. You think that's going to be a good class? No. So, that's why. That's the reason. Okay, next question. Do you believe that it is possible to find nirvana based on logic only? Yeah, good question. We're talking about logic. Do you believe that it is possible to find nirvana based on logic only? To find nirvana, you cannot base it on anything, let alone logic. If you base on anything at all, it's wrong. What do you base it on? You tell me. Base it on logic? You mean the one who logic already get enlightenment? You mean the professors who specializes in logic is an enlightened saint? I studied symbolic logic before. The professor taught me, without mentioning the name. I don't think he's enlightened. I can tell you more. If just by knowing logic you get enlightened, then it's so easy. And no one should be a blind believer of logic. Even logic itself is not ultimate. But then you say, okay, then we should get away from logic. No. You can't get away from logic. Not all food is good for you. Can you say, for that reason, I don't want to eat any food? You need food as well as you need logic. But you need the right kind of food. So to find nirvana based on logic only, no. Not based on logic. But when you think, as compared to thinking without logic, without reason, just haphazard, unreasoned, unfound thinking, it's better to think based on logic terms, on a dialectical basis. Why is logic important in thinking? Why is philosophy important in thinking? So if you believe that it is possible to find nirvana based on logic, we cannot find nirvana if we base it on the Buddhist texture. We have to throw away the Buddhist texture to find nirvana. We have to throw away Buddhism. We have to get rid of the Buddhist teaching. The ship that takes you to Victoria, when you're at Nanaimo, you board on the ship. When you get on shore, you want to hang on to the ship, which you call logic, and you don't want to go on shore. You think you can go on shore? Abandon boat, man. abandon your logic. But you need that boat as well as you need logic. If logic is not important, they won't make it into a course. Logic 101, symbolic logic 201. Philosophy cannot be taught in succinct form without the talking of logic. Okay, let's go down. If not, if you say no, it's not based on logic, why do you use the logic of cause and effect to find contradiction with existence of God? No, I don't use logic of cause and effect to find contradiction with the existence of God. I don't want to find any contradiction. This is interesting. I think you misunderstood me. You completely misunderstood what I said. I'm not trying to find contradiction with the existence of God. I only would clarify that if we believe in a God, which you call the first creator, I think there's a problem in believing in that. Then we can talk a little bit more about it, because since this is almost the last question. What's the definition of God? From the perspective of creative, of being a creator, God, of course, you said, is the first creator who created the world. That's God, first creator. But we understand that in this phenomenal world, everything, it causes an effect. No denying about it. This is a law. It comes into being, must have some causes. It cannot come into being without causes. And because it comes into being with causes, because it's interdependent, then it has no inherent existence. That means it cannot exist on its own. Nothing can exist on its own. It cannot come into being all by itself. All interdependence. Can you come into being just by yourself without your mom and dad's production? No. You talk about your own body. Your body comes into being without all these causes put together? It's only so obvious and obvious, even scientifically, it's so obvious that you need cause and effect without saying who created the cause and created the effect. You agree on that. That's simple physics also. Without blindly believing science. Everybody knows about it. You believe it and you say, I don't believe it, that's your choice. I don't believe in cause and effect, it's your choice. But you, by not believing in it, you cannot stop cause and effect. It happens every day. It's a way of explaining how things come into being and how things end. So if you talk about a God, you said there's a first creator. That first creator, because it's being called a first, it cannot have another first that's the forerunner of it. If there's another creator that created this creator, he's not called a first. So by saying that this is the first creator, that means you are saying that the first creator comes into being without a cause. No causes for its being come into being, then you're contradicting yourself. You're contradicting the law of physics of cause and effect. Because how can anything come into being without any cause? By itself, it comes into being. A contradiction. I'm just pointing out a contradiction. It's your choice to believe in it. You say, I believe in God. It doesn't matter what you say. It's your choice. We're not stopping you from believing in it. And if you say chicken and egg, egg is the first creator. The egg hatched into a chicken. And don't ask me where the eggs come from. Don't ask. Then you're contradicting yourself. Because the egg comes from the chicken. This is chain effect. There's no beginning, no end. For that reason, don't use don't use the concept of duality to think about the universe, the universe creation, because you're contradicting yourself. You have to go beyond duality, beyond beginning and end. Don't say there's a beginning. If you say there's a beginning, you're saying that there's a first cause. If you're saying there's a first cause, you're contradicting yourself by saying that first cause comes up without any causes. You're contradicting. No, nothing comes up with any causes. You're contradicting yourself. If you think that when I die, nothing got left, you're also contradicting yourself. Because if there's no beginning, how can there be an end? The end only applies to if there's a beginning. And also, if you look at simple physics, as I mentioned, the law of energy conservation, energy never get disappear. It transform into another location. It transform in another form. So dying is not the ending of a life. Dying is the beginning of another life. We're in reincarnation. Dying is just the beginning. But the dying, the passing away, dying and living again is just what you call a physiological change, a biological change of stopping the palpitation of the heart, no more oxygen, clinically pronounced death, and then you roll into the next life again. It's a cycle. We call it 12 dependents of origination. All right, that's enough for this. So what if ourselves only apply to our shaky current world? What if how things are the truth at the same time? How about all of the other Hindu, Christian saints that base their lives on devotion to God and actually attain them? Well, you want to devote it to you'll be very devotional to your own God. Nobody can stop you. There's a lot to talk about it. The Buddha's teaching never said anything bad about Hindu or Christian. They're walking different roads to the same destination. If they're truly Christian, they're truly Hindu believers. It's different roads leading to Rome. You choose what you want. You don't interfere with others. You don't criticize others for choosing a different path. That's not what we're doing. We're explaining a phenomenon. We're not criticizing on your road. You have your own road. Why do I have to force you into my road? Why do I say that my road is better than you? You have to convert it to my road. You have your own selection. Last question. Sometimes I'm so sorry about my past actions, but I can't change anything. If I really understand about it, what am I hope about my future? I may be just for my next life, I will change for better. Well, there's a better way. There's a good way. It's called repentance. The Buddha's teaching contain a method to alleviation of your karmic energy. The karma would go into one direction, but if you produce enough good karma, you may postpone it or you may purify it. So you can change your life. If you did something wrong in your past life, into this life, and you are afraid of retribution, there are ways to purify it. Just like when your clothes get dirty, you can always wash it day by day and until it is clean. There are ways to do it.